Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 19th of November. This is the program that's part of our Faith Radio network in which we try to do our best to hit the relevant news headlines of the day as well as any special interest topics that would be on the minds and hearts of us as believers walking out life in this world, in our families, as single people, as people that are grandparents, any place we are on the journey, we'll cover the news here. And we'll do so from a Christian perspective. We are not CNN or Fox News. We are here to cover the news from the perspective of the kingdom of God, the only kingdom that knows no end, and its King and Savior, the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Glad to be here with you. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and Rachel Sutton and Paul Perot, as always, are with me in studio. They do such a great job each morning, and I know I compliment them each morning, but they do a great job each morning bringing the news and the guests from around our country. It's going to be a good first hour ahead as we try to cover so much of the headlines. We'll start with Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post here in just a couple of minutes. And Brandon and I will talk about a little bit about the journalist from Saudi Arabia that was killed, Khashoggi, in the CIA report that came out late last week that suggested the crown prince of Saudi Arabia really was behind his killing. Brandon and I will also talk a little bit about some of the gender fluidity and embryo swapping happening in our country these days as we get our head around some things around fertility and gender. And Brandon does such a great job covering those kinds of topics from a Christian standpoint for the Christian Post. We'll also have Adam Carrington join us on the line in this hour, the second half of this hour. He's a professor of politics at Hillsdale College. And Brandon and I will talk about the legalities of whether you can revoke a press pass, as the president did to the CNN reporter Jim Acosta. And Acosta's press pass has been restored to him. And what do we see moving forward with that, as the president tends to make the press the enemy of the people and is saying it more and more often. So we'll get Adam's perspective on some of those things here in the first hour of our show as well. And of course, at any point in the morning, as we are talking with guests, as we're reflecting on some of the different news, you want to write into the show through text or call to the show, we certainly welcome that at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And before going to Brandon here after a break in just a moment, let's start with a little scripture this morning about the nature of our real life and where we'll find it. There's so often the kind of idea that the best life that we are to lead and God's best for us is just right around that next corner of success, and we never really seem to get there. And so we think, gosh, we've just got to have enough faith and eventually all things will work out in this life. And into that kind of thinking, Paul writes this to the Colossians people: "You have been raised to new life with Christ, so set your sights on the realities of heaven. Think about the things of heaven, not the things of this earth, for you died to this life, and your real life is now hidden with Christ in God. And when Christ, who is your life, is revealed to the whole world, then you will share in all of his glory." So for those of you that are going through turmoil and travail, maybe some suffering today, and are wondering, you know, when will this ever end? Certainly when this world comes to an end and zips up like a scroll, then our Savior will return in glory and the fullness of our best life will be available to us now. So let's keep walking this out together here on Faith Radio Mornings as we're listening as believers from all over the country. And with that, Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post will be next. Minutes past the hour here on the 19th of November on Faith Radio Mornings. And if you listen to the opening, you know that we're joined, first of all, by Brandon Showalter, who writes for the Christian Post. It's a great news magazine, our online resource in which you can hear and see so much of the news from a Christian standpoint. Brandon's a regular contributor here on Monday mornings to talk about some of these different headlines. Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning, Peter. So good to be with you again.
Yeah, I love having you on the show, Brandon. It's one of those things, you know, as we deal with the news, there's just that sense, and maybe you heard me read that passage from Colossians in the beginning, that yes, we do have to do life in this world, but boy, with some of the news headlines that are there week in and week out, it gets troubling. And so there's that sense in which, thankfully, there is a kingdom yet to come, right?
Well, if we can't focus on the kingdom that is yet to come, we really have no hope. But because we do have it. And that's not a cutesy, trite phrase. It's really real. And it certainly helps me navigate some of the issues that I have to report on. But we've got to set our eyes on the things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. And we can just put our total confidence in that.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily take away all the pain or even any of the pain sometimes in some of this stuff, but it does kind of underpin it with a hope that often makes no sense. And certainly in the headlines that we saw over the last maybe 72 hours or so in terms of the journalist that was killed, Khashoggi, there was a CIA report that came out late last week that certainly, if not a smoking gun, all signs point to the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia.
Well, you know, the Crown Prince, his brother, made a phone call to Khashoggi, the dissident that was killed and dismembered. And that phone call was to tell Khashoggi, hey, it's fine. You can go to the consulate. No one will harm you. The evidence is overwhelming that the Crown Prince was involved. And so, no, I don't think we can sweep this under the rug.
And, of course, that was Senator Rand Paul who was commenting on the idea that this really, all signs point to Saudi Arabia being directly involved in his killing.
Yes, and I think it's going to be a story that we're going to have to continue to watch in light of all of the speculation that is out there. It would not surprise me if indeed he was involved. It certainly looks that way. The latest reports that I'm seeing about this matter is that President Trump never wanted to make a big deal out of the assassination of this journalist Jamal Khashoggi, and the CIA has reportedly concluded, as Senator Paul just indicated, that it was ordered by the Crown Prince. The point President Trump made is that this kind of thing does happen. There's been big, significant media coverage about this Khashoggi incident, but this kind of thing happens in rogue governments and in communist dictatorships, big actors that we deal with on a regular basis. This kind of thing happens more than people, I think, realize. It's distressing, obviously, because Khashoggi was not a citizen of the United States, but a permanent resident here. But it's definitely something that we're going to have to continue to watch.
And certainly there's a sense in which Saudi Arabia has been a partner of ours in the Middle East. And yet at the same time, this is one of those things that can really place some tension in an area that really can be a tinderbox for violence.
Well, that's Middle East politics, a tinderbox. I mean, I think it is wholly wrong for people to think. I mean, when we consider geopolitics and the necessity of we can't not deal with these actors in this region. They have a very different way of conducting business over there, and it's not like our Western heritage. I mean, not that there isn't corruption here too, but this is life in the Middle East, and tensions run high, and I think a tinderbox is probably the best way to possibly describe it. I think also of what's been going on with, Israel and Gaza, the rockets, that hasn't gotten so much media coverage here, but if that gives you any indication of just how passionate people over there are, well, there you go. It is what it is. And as Christians, we need to continue to be watchful and to pray and just value the truth above all else, whatever it may be.
Well, and certainly we see some of that same kind of religious passion that you reference in the situation with the woman, Asia Bibi, who was released. She was acquitted from blasphemy charges and released and can't really seem to find any sort of place for asylum right now. But boy, there was quite a bit of demonstration in Pakistan right now that was demonstrating against her release. And there's a lot of concern for Christians in that neck of the woods right now.
Yes, it's been absolutely horrific to see. I mean, reports that my colleagues here at the Christian Post have done some reporting on this. Even Christians in Pakistan are paying the price for Asia Bibi's freedom. They've been beaten and dragged out of cars and, wounded. It's the hostility towards the people of God in that nation is quite apparent. Just because of actual justice that was done. I mean, we see so much, obviously, I believe it's demonic activity against the Bride of Christ in that nation. And yes, We need to continue to pray that Asia Bibi is able to find safe asylum. Rand Paul, who you just played, is working on trying to even get her here to the United States, which it's going to be interesting in that there are some particularly gnarly politics that surround the ban that, it's called the Muslim ban, but it really was the ban from people entering the United States from a certain country. And if I'm not mistaken, Pakistan was on that list. And yet Asia Bibi clearly would be one person who, if there's anybody who deserves asylum in the United States, is this poor woman. But her lawyer is, I think, in the Netherlands right now on asylum. And, Britain has been, involved in some talks, but apparently they're not going to offer it in light of what's happened there in Britain, in the Pakistani community, in the Muslim community in Britain. So there's just all kinds of complex geopolitics playing. I've also read that Canada is considering giving her asylum. The bottom line is that we need to pray that this woman's long nightmare finally comes to an end, because she deserves a place to rest in peace and in safety.
And you referenced the United Kingdom, Brandon, too. I know that certainly within London, now have an Islamic mayor, and there's wide swaths of London that when you walk through them, they really do look a bit more like Pakistan than they would a traditional Western world. And so we've had a lot of religious diversity, and I think for some understandable and good reasons. But boy, there was, I think, a lot of worry in the UK that if they gave her asylum, that a lot of what's happened and some of the religious change in London would really, that'd be problematic for them.
Well, and Britain is really on the edge right now in light of the, there's huge distress over the Brexit dealings that are currently going on and the deals that are not satisfying to people when they voted on 2 years ago. And you couple that with the spate of terrorist attacks that they have in years. And so there are so many different dynamics working here. And the demographics, as you indicated, have changed. And so there are a lot of other calculations that have to be made. But I would just reiterate, Asia Bibi needs asylum somewhere in the West, and I hope she gets it soon.
It's Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post, who joins us regularly here on Monday mornings on Faith Radio Mornings, talking about the news from a Christian standpoint. And Brandon, we'll shift the conversation when we come back from break. There's some interesting news coming out of UC Berkeley, and a student who refused to resign from one of her positions there at the school because she was believing that gender really is a biological reality and not a choice. And she experienced a lot of blowback from that. So that's what we'll cover next here with Brandon Showalter on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings as we're chatting with Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post about some of the different news topics of the day. And Brandon, saw that there's some information and news coming out of the University of California, Berkeley, in which a student, Isabella Chow, was voting against her campus organization of which she was a part, called the Associated Students of the University of California Party Student Action. And in that situation, they wanted to oppose the resolution that President Trump is bringing forth to more narrowly define gender as something biological and not as choice. And when she was voting against her own party, her own sort of union there that was trying to resist Trump's initiative, we see that they pretty much disowned her at that point. What do we see in this entire story?
Well, Isabella Chow is a really brave gal. As you indicated, she actually abstained from voting. She didn't vote against this resolution, but she just decided that because she is a Christian, so she did not agree with this notion that has developed fairly recently in our culture that gender is a choice, that you're going to just identify with it, whichever one wants. And she just had the most gracious statement saying that she knows that many churches have mistreated people who identify as LGBT or whatever, but she, in good conscience, could not sign on to this resolution that the Student Senate was putting forward in a rebuke to the Trump administration, which, it's so interesting that all of a sudden that they have decided to define gender based on biology, which, I mean, who knew that was controversial? I mean, all of a sudden, I mean, really, this, our biological sex is a reality that is recognizable based on our body. I mean, and yet now that is somehow a controversial thing. It's not even been implemented yet. It was based on a New York Times report of a potential memo that an actual memo that was leaked. And, you just got to tip your hat to Ms. Chow for being courageous and gracious at the same time, being willing to tell the truth about the human body and why it matters and about human sexuality. And I salute her. And so, especially in an environment like UC Berkeley, which is notoriously secular and liberal, and she's to be commended. And I think every Christian of goodwill ought to offer up a few prayers on her behalf, because she's really taking a lot of heat, but she seems to be taking it in stride. I've seen a few follow-up interviews with her. So hang in there, Isabella Chow. That's what I say.
Well, and she suggested that her sense of love demands that she is pursuing that which is right and good. And of course, in our country, love means that we approve of something, not necessarily that we're pursuing what is whole.
Well, I think the perversion of love is nowhere more apparent than in these issues. I mean, it really can't be said enough that disagreeing with someone doesn't mean that you hate them. It really doesn't. And if we really love people, we're going to tell them the truth. Jesus came to bring us grace and truth, and the order is important. Grace precedes truth, but you need both. You can't have one without the other. And the truth cuts, but it's a compassionate thing, because it always rejoices in the truth, according to 1 Corinthians 13. Love always tells the truth.
And, of course, with that truth, we are set free, even if it's not easy, even if it's painful at times. It is really the only place for freedom in that. It's Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post, who joins us and talks articulately about so many of the news headlines and topics of the day. And, Brandon, you and I talk about reproductive science from time to time. And, boy, was there a headline needing to be addressed here about it sounds like a couple that wanted to swap embryos with another family because they wanted to have one gender and they were having another. So they decided, let's go ahead and swap kids in our wombs.
Yes, this was one of the more unbelievable stories. As you mentioned, I do tend to cover bioethics and reproductive medicine rather frequently here at the Christian Post, and the stories coming out these days are just blow your mind awful. This was one where a woman, it was reported in the New York Post, she had been struggling with infertility for a while, but she had embryos made, and she decided that she wanted a girl, but the only embryo that she had left was a boy. And so this is an embryo that is comprised of her and her husband's genetic material. But because they wanted a boy, they were willing to actually give away their biological son in embryo form and trade it with another couple. And there was just sort of the story about, you know, finding someone who'd be willing to swap with a girl for a girl baby, and they had found someone in California who was potentially interested. But the bottom line, I think, for Christians who I have found, except for Catholics and some evangelicals, we really need to rethink and engage more deeply on these issues of reproductive medicine and the technology. I think sometimes in America we have to, just like with surrogacy when we spoke a few weeks ago, we have this idea in our heads that we're so sophisticated and that we have the most awesome medical technological advances, when in fact we need to really consider the ethics of these kinds of things, because children are not commodities. You know, we don't just they're not to be swapped and traded and bought and sold and exchanged on a market. They're human beings. And we don't do that kind of thing with human beings. We have a preeminent value. We should have a value for life and recognize the dignity of every human person, whether that person is in embryonic form or whether that person is elderly or a child or a middle-aged or a teenager. We need to really think through this, the implications of this, because commodifying human beings, we've been there before in American history, and it's not a pleasant chapter to revisit. We shouldn't be doing this, especially in the church, and I think we need to speak out against it and just, you know, and stand up for those who are vulnerable. And there's so many of these embryos that are just made and frozen for years who will never see the light of day. And it opens up a tremendous Pandora's box and can of worms that I think we have not seen the full effects of, and it's not a pretty picture. But yeah, this story was pretty jarring, seeing a woman who was literally willing to give away her own genetic child just because she wanted a girl. I mean, so much of this reproductive medicine is not about the best needs of the child. It's all about what the adults want. That's a huge difference, and that's a huge paradigm shift. Whenever we're considering the making of life. It always needs to be in the interest of the child, always.
It's Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post. And Brandon, we have about a minute left here, but you said it at the end. It was maybe more about the parents than it was about concern for the child. And it seems like this is when the American pursuit of happiness goes off the rails, isn't it? It's when we're empowered to sort of do whatever we want to do that we think will make us happy.
Well, it's the pursuit of happiness on steroids, and it's motivated by just extreme selfishness. I remember the woman who was quoted who was looking to do this embryo swap was when she was challenged and when people pushed back on her. I mean, people had sort of a visceral reaction that, oh, you're just going to give up your own child just because you want something. She just said, well, you don't walk in my shoes. It's like that kind of blindness is really – we're going to pay for that. I mean, it's such a horrific thing. And again, I would just reiterate – this is an actual child we're talking about. This is not – we can't just section this off and compartmentalize this. We've got to think deeply about the implications of what we're doing. And children should never be bought and sold, no matter what form they're in.
Mm. Brandon, absolutely love your insight and wisdom that you come to the program with here as you join us on Faith Radio Mornings. And just keep covering that stuff for the Christian Post. We really do need voices of sanity and reason of all this. So thanks again for being a part of it.
Thank you, Peter, and a happy Thanksgiving to you.
Yeah, I hope you have a great week ahead, Brandon. We'll take a short break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News. And when we come back, we'll be joined by another regular contributor to the program. That's Dr. Adam Carrington, who joins us to talk about politics. And I'm going to ask Adam about the legalities of revoking a press pass and then having it restored and President Trump's ongoing battle with the media. Well, congratulations to our friends in North Dakota. Those of you in North Dakota that follow North Dakota State University Bison, your football team finished undefeated in this regular season with what appeared to be a very tight and nail-biting 65-17 win over Southern Illinois. So well done moving into the playoffs from here for the North Dakota State Bison. I did read an article this week that the Kansas City Chiefs have revolutionized the NFL with their offense, and Coach Andy Reid actually pointed to watching film of the North Dakota State Bison for a lot of inspiration for the offense that he runs. So with no NFL team in North Dakota, you have still reshaped the NFL. Of course, it's Thanksgiving week this week here in our country, and following Thanksgiving, we'll celebrate Black Friday, I suppose, as a country. And we had Gary Stratton on last Friday, and he was talking about avoiding the dangers of greed.
Boy, I tell you, it is tough. I mean, Sue and I were doing a study before one Christmas on Colossians 3, put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, check, impurity, check, lust, check, evil desires, check, and greed, which is idolatry. Oh, man. I mean, we would never deliberately train our children to lust or impurity. Like, we would never, you know, do that. Not intentionally, anyway. And yet we realize in this consumeristic culture, if you're not really careful, you end up training your children to greed.
Sure, I'm glad we found Gary's voice this morning. He's always so helpful joining us from Johnson University. He's a university professor there of spiritual formation and Christian worldview, and joins us to just talk about how we can keep walking out life faith and growing in our faith, most importantly, as we seek to become more Christ-like and shine Jesus' light in this world. So if you want to catch all of what Gary had to say from last week, you can go to myfaithradio.com and search for Gary Stratton for both of that 15 minutes together and also past episodes with Gary. Well, I see that Dr. Adam Carrington is already on the line, and we're going to chat next about some of the political situation in Washington, D.C., specifically about the relationship that the president has with the press as what he would say is often the enemy of the people, and whether he legally can revoke their passes.
Offering Thanksgiving at all levels is great, but don't stop there. This is Jim Garland. I think of Thanksgiving as a gateway attitude. Being grateful implies something very precious to God, humility. Indeed, Micah 6:8 reveals that you are to walk humbly with your God. As he tells us in Proverbs chapter 6, verse 17, haughty eyes, otherwise known as pride. Humility leads to submission. Submission leads to obedience, following his ways, his will, his word, his commandments. Blessings naturally follow. And it all flows out of a heart filled with gratitude. So this Thanksgiving, be thankful for all you have. Be grateful regardless of circumstances. in times of plenty and during trials. Praise God for all He's done. Praise Him for who He is. It's a formula that can't lose. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
That's the music of Dr. Adam Carrington, who again is another regular guest here of Faith Radio Mornings. He joins us to talk about some of the legal issues going on in our country. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. How are you doing this week?
Well, doing well. Heading out for vacation actually tomorrow, which will be great as we celebrate Thanksgiving week. I'm curious, you know, you're in Michigan, Adam, at Hillsdale, and I do enjoy the NFL. I do enjoy watching football. Do you have any idea why the Detroit Lions, what's the tradition? Why do they always get that first game on Thanksgiving Day?
That is a good question. I know that it's been an ongoing tradition for 60, 70 years. So that's the main thing I actually know about it. I'm not sure why they got it in the first place. I actually have a hometown connection to the Detroit Lions. They used to be the Portsmouth, Ohio Spartans in the late 20s and the early 30s. So even though I grew up a Cincinnati Bengals fan down in Ohio, they were always my second team. So it's funny that when I finally got an academic job, I got one in their media market. So I can watch the old Portsmouth Spartans play.
Well, of course, as a football guy too, in that neck of the woods, Michigan and Ohio State is everything, right? I mean, that's what's coming up this week.
Oh yeah, I'm a little worried this week because I grew up an Ohio State fan. My grandfather would haunt me from the grave if that was possible. I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying if it was possible, he would do it if I ever switched allegiances. Ohio State has never lost to Michigan while I've taught at Hillsdale. I'm in my fifth year, and the grief I'm going to catch because of all the grief I've doled out to Michigan fans, if Michigan finally beats them, there will be a reckoning. And I can't say I won't deserve it, but that doesn't mean I want to get it. So,
well, it's certainly worth everything, you know, to take a shot in that situation, from what I understand. Well, thanks for joining us. I know I was thinking about it last week in terms of what's going on with the president and his ongoing battle with the media. And the president was on this weekend on Fox News with Chris Wallace, and he was talking about, again, the media being the enemy of the people. And it's a phrase that he seems to be tossing around across the board for so many. So we have some audio from this weekend with the president and Chris Wallace.
Chris, I'm calling the fake news is the enemy. It's fake. It's phony. They'll take something
good. It's just news you don't like.
No, it's not. No. I don't mind getting bad news if I'm wrong.
The idea that you call us the enemy of the people.
I'm not calling you that.
I'm talking about we're all together.
You don't understand it.
We're all together.
No. I'm not calling you.
It doesn't matter whether you call. When you call CNN and the New York Times.
I am calling.
And we're in solidarity, sir.
I am calling.
Of course, this was all instigated by him revoking Jim Acosta's press pass of CNN. They have a history over the 2 years of having just a wee bit of antagonism between them. So did the White House have a legal right to revoke his press pass?
Yeah, they are pretty good frenemies, you might call them in a certain sense. Do they have the legal right? I don't think, given what they've shown so far, and to explain that, I think that no press person has a right to be on the White House grounds to start with. But once the government starts giving out press passes, allowing people access, they can't distinguish or they can't block out media merely because they don't like their viewpoint, merely because they don't get along with them. And what you would have to prove with Acosta is that he was more than just being antagonistic to the president, that he was being disruptive in a way that was unacceptable on White House grounds. And yes, Acosta has not bathed his profession in glory. But when even Fox News wants to defend that he was not crossing an antagonistic line to, go beyond what normal press should be allowed to do, you probably know that, you know, that this was probably more based on viewpoint, that Acosta has been, I think, often unfair. He's often been very he is a very good grandstander. But I think what the idea is that unless you're actually causing harm to people, the media can't be blocked out merely for their viewpoint. And I think that's a problem. I know President Obama tried to exclude Fox News not long ago, you know, when he was president, and the other networks like CNN joined to, you know, block that from happening. I think Fox News was probably right to say that until Acosta crosses a harsher red line that goes beyond we don't like his viewpoint, we don't like how he reports, to he's actually shutting down press conferences. I think that that's probably a pretty fair line to make sure that the media has open access.
Well, and what is the intersection of decorum and expectations for the news media with a given public figure and the First Amendment and their rights there? I think, you know, Adam, I covered the Minnesota Timberwolves for the NBA for about 10 years or so, and it was very clear when we headed into those press rooms what sort of decorum was expected of us. There is a lot of rules and regulations that I know if we had broken those things, and if anybody there had acted like Acosta might in some of these press conferences, we wouldn't have been invited back. So where is the sort of boundary between just professional decorum and the First Amendment?
You get a greater pass for being indecorous when the government is the one issuing out the press passes. If it's the National Basketball Association, they're a private organization, they are not covered by the First Amendment as far as who they give press passes out to and not. The government has to be a little more lenient because it could be using it to shut down speech, and the government's not allowed to shut down speech except in extreme circumstances. So my guess is if he's trying to not give up the microphone, which was the incident that everyone was talking about, you know, that probably isn't enough if he does it once. So in other words, he can act pretty indecorous if he wants. But there are some instances, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, but if he really did physically strike another person, or if he did something that really shut down the press conference entirely, I think those are the kind of things that would clearly cross the line. And I think what's really going to happen is if the White House really wants to pursue this, what they need to prove is that there was a longer string of problems that lead up to the necessity to revoke this rather than trying to pin it on this one event.
Well, as we look at the relationship between the president and the news, and you referenced even Obama as well, what kind of expectations can presidents have for those that maybe aren't in alignment with their policy? And what do we see, Adam, in terms of news organizations that obviously have quite a bit of slant and bias to them? It doesn't seem like there's a lot of unbiased journalistic facts being presented from either side anymore.
No, and I should say, you know, when you ask the First Amendment question issue, or that issue, I think that CNN and Acosta have a strong point and that they should probably win, at least for now. That's an entirely different question as to whether CNN and Acosta are using their First Amendment power of access to the White House in an appropriate way. There's, you know, Justice Scalia used to have allegedly a stamp in his office where he could stamp things stupid but constitutional, right? I think that the American people should expect a lot more out of their news media and the news organizations than the First Amendment demands that the government do. And I think with that, you certainly see why the White House is frustrated with someone like Acosta. And I think that that demand should be much higher, that there obviously is a lot of news that is, I won't say fake in the sense of truly just completely fabricated, but you do have very slanted news media. You do have very much a stretching of the facts. And I think that that kind of frustration is something, though, that the fact that we have freedom of the press means we have different options. And I think that the marketplace of airtime and ideas is probably the best way to force news organizations to actually report better. And that's, I think, on the American people to demand that.
It's Adam Carrington, who teaches political science at Hillsdale College and covers politics for us here regularly on Faith Radio Mornings. And Adam, when we come back from break, we'd love to change the topic over to the Robert Mueller investigation. We saw the resignation, forced resignation of Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General and the appointment of Matthew Whitaker. That's created some consternation that maybe he could shut down or at least slow walk the investigation. And I'm curious about some of the legalities of that. And so we'll talk about that with Adam Carrington next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 9 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we're joined by Dr. Adam Carrington, who covers politics for us here on Faith Radio Mornings. And Adam, during the break, I was talking with our producer, Rachel Sutton, and she was talking about wanting to take her husband out to Washington, D.C., see the nation's capital. Do you have the one go-to spot that if you're going to go to Washington, D.C., you just must see?
I would say the Lincoln Memorial. And this might be the perfect day to say it because it's actually the anniversary of the Gettysburg Address being given. But it's quite magnificent to go in there, and not only to see the statue of Lincoln seated, looking out over to the Washington Monument, but there are several of his greatest speeches that are printed in full within the monument, and I think it's something amazing to sit there and read, and even if you can read out loud, if you're not going to bother the person next to you, the words that in many ways shaped and reformed the nation in one of its greatest trials.
And there certainly is something about being aware of history to help inform our current conversations. And just simply going back and looking at some of those documents really does give some perspective, doesn't it?
It does. And I think hopefully what it does is something we've talked about here is that it takes you out of the current opinion polls, the current setup of partisanship, and makes you ask the bigger questions about what does justice mean, what is the good, what do we hold in common, what does it mean to be a human being created in the image of God. And I think that those broader documents that are really trying to establish first principles are really a great place to start and a great place to refresh yourself. It's certainly something I try to focus on here when I can in my classes as a way of preparing students to be citizens, not just partisans.
Yeah, it certainly does help inform our conversations about the current headlines when we have a sense of history. And what do we see then in some of the conversation around the Robert Mueller investigation of the possibility of Russia's meddling in our elections in 2016, as well as President Trump possibly colluding with Russia to do just that? And we saw maybe a week and a half ago the firing of Jeff Sessions and the hiring of Matthew Whitaker. And a lot of people were concerned by that because they've seen that Whitaker has written in the past that there are ways in which you can slow walk this investigation. What are the legalities that face President Trump if he did want to try to slow walk or even fire Robert Mueller?
Ultimately, he has, I think, the constitutional and legal power to have him fired. Mueller is a part of the executive branch. He is, therefore, as part of the executive branch, serves at the pleasure of the president. So at least as far as a legal or constitutional issue at the current time, he's free to do that. At the same time, I think politically it would be very problematic among non-deep supporters of the president. And the reason why is I think that the idea is that while that ultimately the executive branch doesn't serve just the president, it serves the Constitution and the rule of law. And the idea that you would put someone in place merely to protect yourself from an investigation is, if not against the letter of the Constitution, certainly against the spirit. And that's why there's been some raucous about how Whitaker was appointed. He has not been confirmed by the Senate in any capacity near the AG position. And so one of the questions is, does someone who serves as the Attorney General need to be a Senate-approved person for the sake of having some kind of check and saying that the Senate's going to say whoever gets appointed, yes, they serve at the pleasure of the president, but there's someone we believe will be a fair executor of the law. And that's one of the debates that actually now looks like it might go all the way to the Supreme Court about Whitaker's appointment.
There's some anticipation, Adam, too, that the report from the Mueller investigation is going to be coming forth shortly. He's been asking the president questions that the president's been responding to in writing. And, of course, the heart of it is whether the president colluded with Russia. And my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that collusion is a hard thing to prove because it requires understanding intent.
Right. You have to prove intent. You have to prove that sort of have a smoking gun. And the other thing is, it depends upon what the collusion is, because I guess collusion in a certain sense is, did you work together at all? At the same time, I think that what they really mean by collusion is something higher and deeper and more sinister, which is sort of a, if you help me, I will do what you want, which would be itself, you could possibly say, sort of treasonous in sort of the old-fashioned sense. I will say, and I've said this a couple times when this has come up over the last year or so, I don't think that's what they're going to find. I think that Mueller will find probably a lot of problematic, maybe even illegal activity done by the campaign. I think he might find some things that are ethically questionable to wrong. But the idea that he's going to find some sort of smoking gun relationship with Russia, I think that's something that a lot of people have their hopes up and that are probably going to be sorely disappointed. I don't think it'll rise anywhere near to that kind of the Americans, if anyone watched that show, sort of storyline.
Well, it is going to be fascinating to watch, and look forward to your commentary as we see more headlines coming out on that, Adam. And I hope you have a great Thanksgiving Day week ahead. I certainly will collude with your colleagues if Ohio State gets beat this weekend. I'll probably send some emails to your department to see what we can do to hang you out to dry.
Well, I hate to say I'll deserve it, but I'm hoping that I can hold it off for one more year. Go Bucks.
Happy Thanksgiving, Adam. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thanks, you too.
Take a break here, wrap up our show, and preview of what's coming up here for Hour 2 on Faith Radio Mornings. I always appreciate Adam's perspective on politics and just the depth and nuance he can bring to that topic. And I see that up next here in Hour 2, we're going to be joined by Kim Cotola of Cradle My Heart, and we're going to talk about some updates, pretty significant ones related to abortion bills in our country.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.